Welcome to this special edition of Game Changers Live. This is your host, Dennis Trionos of the Trionos Group. Today I'm joined by Stephen Yu, the CEO of Willow Data Strategy. Stephen and I met a number of years ago when he was one of the original founders of iBehavior, which is now part of Knowledge Based Marketing, a division of Wunderman Advertising. Stephen, thank you for coming here today to discuss one of the hottest topics in marketing.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Yes, that is a big topic, isn't it?
Before we start, I'd like you to give us a little backdrop on Willow Data Strategy and what do you do for your clients? Give us a little sense of your business.
Basically, we build roadmap for data strategy because a lot of folks, they literally jump into this big data thing because it's a big thing to do these days. Mm-hmm. But without a roadmap, a lot of people get lost. So what we try to do is to, one, set up the data strategy, meaning the roadmap, to see what they have. That involves data audit and all this data analytics. And also design the marketing database so that you can actualize all these advanced model-based targeting can be actualized in real time. So that's what we do. So it's a consulting service. Basically, we listen to what they need and then figure out, okay, we want to go from A to B. This is how you get there. That's step number one. Step number two would be, okay, this is how you're going to make your dream come true. That involves all these vendor searches and qualification and writing.
What kind of searches?
Vendors. In other words, you have to imagine you are building making a movie, if you will. Uh-huh. We act as a movie director.
Right.
You have your dream. Right. We understand your dream, and you want to make that kind of movie. We're going to put together these resources and make it all happen. So that role is really important because a lot of times I meet a lot of database designers. It's like shooting a movie without a director. Just collect the data, put together all these things, put it in one place, think that it's a marketing database. Really isn't. Because all the actors and actresses and all the movie crew work really hard, that does not guarantee that the movie is going to be a good one.
Well, but so that's interesting. Using your metaphor of movies and combining it with roadmap, you know, when we think of a roadmap, we think of, as you say, getting from point A to point B. When you think of a movie, you think of a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it would seem to me that in data strategy, a lot of people kind of understand where the beginning is and maybe even have a hint to where the middle is. But who's got the ability out there to predict what the end is when this is an evolving discipline? What are you finding out there about the end part?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let me just build it up in terms of all this, you put it in a time series analogy. To be a great player of the data, you have to be really good at three different things. One is collection and storage. And a lot of times I go into all these big data conferences and discussions, and it ends right there. Yeah, we have all this data. We collected past 20 years of history. I can retrieve any kind of transaction within, say, 0.5 seconds. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the first step. It's an important step, and the data becomes bigger and bigger, so storage is a problem. Retrieving the information fast is important. But that's just the first stage, the first step being the collection. The second stage is data refinement, and this is where it gets really interesting. Refinement means, let me make another analogy. Well, when you want a gold watch, you got to mine the gold first.
Mm-hmm.
But gold will not tell you time. You got to refine the gold. You got to really design the watch. You got to actually manufacture it. The refinement of the data process is the same thing. You have all this data. It doesn't mean anything. The first step is to ask the right question. And then create a environment where you can answer these questions in mathematical terms, which involves all these models and whatnot.
Right.
The third part now, the data is refined now. The data looks like in the form of a question now. It's like, oh, yeah, I can answer this question. Let me be more specific. You have all these data points floating out there. Yeah, I could tell like who's shopping where, who has how much income, does she have a family, or is she a working mother? What is her annual income? We know all these things. And we can even find out where her mobile phone is parked between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. We all just figure it out, but these are just bits and pieces of data. What you really want to know as a business owner is that, hey, I'm in a travel industry. I got all these cruise tickets that I got to get rid of really fast. My question is not about how much she makes or where she lives. I don't care. Right. What I really care is like, okay, well, what is the probability of her responding to some kind of an offer about the cruise ship? It's not even a first class, it's an inside stateroom, which leaves between, Thanksgiving and Christmas, European bound, all that. What is the probability? That's a business question.
Gotcha.
Now, you got to refine the data, all these bits and pieces of data, to make it as an answer to that question. That's what I call refinement process. It starts with asking the right question and forming all this environment so they can harness the meanings out of the data. And then the final piece is what you asked. I so far talked about collection, refinement. The final piece is delivery. The delivery is important. It's more like a conclusion in a movie analogy.
Right.
How do you get to that person so that when she or he is making a decision, is he a kind of a person who just opens up the email every morning mm-hmm. and say, all right, these are the graphics that I need to know, and I just need to know how we're doing with the campaign or whatever. So that will be the final piece.
You're listening to a special edition of Game Changers Live. Today I'm here with Stephen Yu, the CEO of Willow Data Strategy. Stephen, at virtually every marketing conference, the big topic, the hot topic is big data. So why has big data become sort of the Cinderella at the ball? Data has been around a long, long time.
That's right. Well, it's getting into a different stage at this point. And I'm sure you heard about this before, but they quote 3 V's when they make the differentiation. Because what's interesting is that for the data player like me, the computer has been getting faster or the storage getting better, bigger. That's not news. But what's really happening is that it's really big and really fast now. So the first differentiating factor is the volume. It's really, really large. Number two is the velocity. It moves so fast that the things that you would take, say, a few months of planning and another few weeks to read the result. Interestingly enough, if those things can happen real time, the velocity is important. The third part is the variety. The kind of data that we have today is the kind of data we never touched in the past. So that variety factor is a big differentiating factor. But I would say that the most important reason why this is different at this point is that the data players used to be sort of isolated, even a marketing agency or in a corporate world. We were tucked into some room there, say, yeah, you're data people. Mm-hmm. We'll call you when we feel like calling you. That used to be the case. Now, with this big data movement, and by the way, when I say big data, I'm using a very loose term here because a lot of people use the term when they try to incorporate data process in their decision-making process. They just call it big data. Doesn't matter how big it is, how fast it is, they just call it big data. Which is fine, because for guys like me, now I don't have to explain what I do for a living for 10 minutes anymore.
Right.
But the biggest change is that, and this is my prediction, now we're at the juncture where we can humanize the data. We can make those data points in terms of business questions. It's not just the differentiating factor between, yeah, you know how to deal with the data, and you don't know how to deal with the data. That differences will go away.
Let us understand. Yeah. What do you mean? Give us an example of humanizing the data.
Because, one, in the past, people used to think that, hey, this is not what I do. I'm a businessman here. Why do I have to look at all these things?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those things are just, how do I put it, data people's job.
Like, right.
Yeah, let me just get the result. My goal is to increase my response rate by XYZ%. But that's not what I do. I'm going to hire a bunch of statisticians and let them figure it out.
Right.
And I just read an article, by the way, interestingly enough, that what is the qualification of a good data scientist? One is, it's not enough to be just a statistician or the data player. You have to really understand why you're doing this thing. And that's a differentiating factor. Humanizing the whole data question in terms of, okay, I'm not going to just throw a bunch of data pieces to decision makers and let them figure it out. I'm going to give you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
My analogy here is that we used to, before all this big movement, we used to just imagine that you want to decorate your office and you need a painting on a wall. Imagine you went to the shop to buy some paintings and they go like, you know what, I'm going to just give you paint and brush and you draw the painting. That used to be how the data business used to be like.
Okay.
But now, with all this like new terms. Oh, by the way, some of the words are really big fat. data scientist is not any different to me, like data analyst or all the other titles that we had in the past. However, I think we're coming across a really important juncture here where, you know what, as a business person, I'm not going to treat this whole data thing as an option anymore. It's a necessity now. And there are a lot of books out there about this as well. That, yeah, there's a stark difference between people who know how to do this and who incorporate all these things into their daily decision-making processes. And people who barely touched all these things and say, hey, what is this and should I even do this? I mean, people come into my store, so why should I be doing this? Big difference. Again, it may not be a clean-cut differentiating who's good and who's bad and all that, but the difference is getting bigger. Now, I'm not going to name names, but there are some supermarket chains. They brag about not having two of the same coupon books to anybody. Right. Everything is 100% customized.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, there are people who just set up the store and just wait for people to show up. Now, the difference is this. Why is it humanizing the whole thing? Because now it's personalized. I get the whole coupon book thinking, oh, yeah, well, I'm a young father now, and I'm really spending too much money on diaper, for example. So if somebody gives me a coupon for diapers, I'm gonna go to that store first.
Sure.
And of course, while I'm at it, I'm not going to just walk out with this box of diapers. I'm going to buy a lot of other things.
Of course.
Such differentiating factor, you know what it calls for is that if I may be technical about this, you got to know what he has been buying, how often he comes to the store, what's his spending level. You got to know the demographics of that person. You got to know a lot about all these things.
So how is big data and the approach to big data different from what you and I in the old days used to call database marketing? Or is it different?
It's not different. It's really, really bigger. The tool sets are different. Tools sets are completely different because now the database structure is different. Now, you and I also are familiar with all this flat file structure all the way to the relational structure. Now, they're talking about no structure database. Because, you know why? Because let me go back to that first point. The data became so big, the storing all of them is a challenge in itself. Finding out what you stored is a challenge in itself. The databases are designed to store a massive amount of data into the space and then retrieve it really fast. That is the foremost goal in this big data movement. But I'm trying to go one step further by being more retro, if you will. What we used to do, and let me just explain why this is important. People say analytics as if they know about what the analytics are. Even Google Analytics. What is Google Analytics really? It's about knowing what's going on right now. That's what that is, right? What we are used to, all these old CRM players, we want to go one step further out. You want to know what is going to happen in the future. That's called predictive analytics. Now, there are many different kinds of analytics. What I just described is, let's just find out what is going on right now. It's what I call BI reporting, business intelligence, or dashboarding. It could be, you call anything you want. But basically, you want to know what is going on right now. Like, I did this. I dropped all these email campaigns, or I did show all these banners in different places, and I used this kind of a Google search word, or whatever you did. What is the result of that? What is going on right now? So that's business intelligence. People call that analytics. The second part is, let's go deeper behind the scene here. It's like people always who clicked all these things. Who are behind all these clicks? How do they look like? Where do they live? Are they using the online channel or the offline channel? What are they look like? So that's what I call descriptive analytics. But the third and most important part, I think, is about the future. Who will respond to this banner ad? Or if I'm sitting at the store somewhere, and I'm selling, say, high-end outdoors gear. Where should I set this up? How do I find out where all the people who are most susceptible to my offer will walk around?
Mm-hmm.
So if I set up the store that way, I will win. But that's not about the present, it's about the future. So, yes, the technologies come and go. The storage is really different now. We talk about all this Hadoop and all these other things, cloud computing and all. It's really to respond to the fact that you cannot just use an old-fashioned relational database to even store all these things. But what I try to emphasize is this. You got to meet somewhere in the middle. That when you're in a business of predicting what's happening in the future, you got to bring back some of the old discipline and restructure some of the things And it is, I'm becoming a little more technical here, but that's why I'm here, actually. If you have any questions, you can always call me on this thing. And I designed the database accordingly. But what I'm trying to say is, you got to have best of both worlds, old and new, so that you can get into that predictive analytics world.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it becomes really bragging right. Yeah, I can retrieve any transaction in 5 seconds. Big deal.
You're listening to a special edition of Game Changers Live. This is Dennis Trianos, and I'm with Stephen Yu, the CEO of Willow Data Strategies. We're going to take a break right now and then come back after the break to ask Stephen a few more questions about some of the intricacies and developments in big data. Game Changers Live is brought to you by the Trianos Group, a leading retained executive search and consulting firm specializing in the marketing, marketing services, data analytics, digital marketing, public relations, and healthcare marketing sectors throughout the U.S. and Canada. Stephen, what advice do you have for organizations that want to jump into big data, and especially for the ones who don't have a historical orientation to using data on a massive scale?
I have a multi-part answer to that question. The number one is, do not jump into that business just because everybody else is doing it. Ask a business question first. Define what questions you want answered first, and then deal with it. Number two, there are a lot of companies who try to do everything in-house on these things. What I suggest is that if you ask, like, say, 10 questions that you need to be answered, I would have some kind of a small project as a proof of concept and say, oh, I want to deal with these questions in this fashion. I want to introduce this data element. Maybe I'm going to shop around for external data, or maybe I'll refine my data that I'm sitting on. It doesn't matter what it is, but I would ask for the help from the outside and make a small success. I would say a series of small successes will lead into the big data conversation. Not some, I must store everything that ever happened in my store ever. Mm-hmm. But don't start out that way, please, because you know what? Data is already big if it requires computing. If you cannot store all these things on a paper or in your head, it's already too big. It requires computing. That means no matter how small or big you think that your data that you're sitting on are, basically you need a database design. You have to really, how do I put it, refine the data again. And then start getting answers out of it. Whether, by the way, you deal with a million lines of coding or a few million lines or some terabytes of data going through the whole thing, the coding itself, the discipline, the logical discipline is not any different. So my suggestion is this. Ask a business question first, and then create small projects to prove your concept. Mm-hmm. And then make sure that all the small concepts become bigger as a collective thing. The third thing that I want to point out is that a lot of people call something failure because they feel like calling a failure. My suggestion is that before you start any of these things, create a really tangible and clear success metrics before you even start anything. So what is your goal? Are you trying to double your revenue just by doing this? Mm-hmm. That ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. Make a realistic goal and make sure that it happens. And two, don't call it a failure just because it's off the mark. This is not some baseball score you lose by one run or by 10 runs you just lost. It's not about that. This whole data business is about learning from your past experience and making the next round better. Mm-hmm. So none of these things that we call is a waste. So the commitment level is very important so that you don't just try a few things and say, it's not working out, so let's give it up. No.
So if you were sitting around talking to a sort of an aspiring mm-hmm. data analyst a couple of years out of school, mm-hmm. wanted to be successful, what would be the two things that you would say are the most important things for that young data analyst to focus on in today's world?
You have to read a lot and watch a lot of movies and travel a lot and try different products. That's what I suggest. Be a consumer first. You can, by the way, when I was in charge of analytics team, I set up some kind of a search for, say, analyst. I get 300 resumes a day. Then what differentiates between a good guy and bad guy, what we call? Mm-hmm. I say, number one, you have to be good at what you're supposed to be doing. If you're a programmer, you have to be good at that. If you're a statistician, you have to be cold on building models and knowing statistics. But that's just prerequisite. The second part is, can you communicate? Because you're living in a different world. So I speak English, they speak stat, nobody understands each other. They think that they understood me, but when they build a model, it's not what I wanted. Or more importantly, it's not what the client wanted. The third part is the business understanding. Let me just give you an example. If you design a database for a bank system or building a model, whatever, and you know the business checking account doesn't bear interest. Now, if you design a database and you don't look at the business side of it, and then you just build this whole thing and say, oh, yeah, it's a numeric field, it's a zero or some number, I'm cool. No, it's not cool. Because you know why? If there's some error and there's some stupid number in that field, there's something wrong about that. And you will not catch it unless you understand why we're doing all these things. And also, you got to really understand the business goals. And there are people who just mindlessly, they call it a... I read it in an article that I read this morning about the data scientist. They call it a data plumber. I think that's the right analogy.
Interesting.
You just move the data around. But you're not answering any questions.
Yeah, yeah.
That comes from the understanding of why is that guy losing sleep at night.
In your experience, are there any industries that leverage or are able to leverage data more than others? I mean...
Yes.
Well, as an example.
As an example, of course, banking, finance, entertainment, hotel. Oh, my God. So hotel and the hospitality industry, they don't get this down cold. It's been a long time since they've been doing this anyway. And they've been doing the big data thing before it was a big data. And, of course, retail is getting into this whole realm. Retail was a little lagging behind because in marketing, there are marketing where you primarily talk to people that you know. It's like, I know who that guy is. I'm going to send him an email or mail or whatever. It's a one-to-one marketing. I know I can carve out my offer to that guy. Conversely, there are some other industry where I'm going to just talk to the massive audience. We call it a mass media. It could be TV, newspaper, publication, whatever, whatnot. Traditionally, such marketers, and I'm not breaking it down by industry here. I'm talking about the channel in which they used to talk to their customers. People who are not in the one-to-one marketing realm used to be a little lagging behind in this whole big data thing. Why? Because one, when you talk to the mass marketing, the only kind of analytics you can possibly do is all these what-if scenarios. You don't really have any information about that person, or even the phone that's moving around, or TVs that they watch. However, I'm making a bold prediction here. Everything will be one-to-one marketing channel in the future. Mm-hmm. Remember the movie called Minority Report by Tom Cruise, as this guy walks into the store and they say, hey, Mr. Whoever, I know that you looked at some blue jeans last month, but you didn't purchase anything. But we have new lines of jeans now, so would you want to take a look at it? Mm-hmm. What just happened here is something that we've been doing in a one-to-one marketing area for a long time, but not that fast. You have to know what he's been doing. You have to retrieve that information. You have to build a model and predict what he would like, and then make an offer, like the deliberate part. You have to make an offer now. That just happened in that movie within a second. Now, I'm not saying that what they did in the movie is an accurate depiction of the reality or for the privacy matter, we should be doing something like that, but I'm not saying that at all. What I'm trying to say is that it got faster and the walls between channels are coming down. A lot of marketing agencies are getting these questions as well, I heard.
Sure.
That, why aren't you looking at my customer base and understand my customers better before you make the $1 million decision to buy the spot?
So on the same note here, having all this experience in data and thinking about it on an ongoing basis, as I know you do, what's the next big thing that our audience would love to know is your prediction about sort of the next big thing in big data from a marketing
Big data is already a next big thing globally, actually. I travel different parts of the world, and I see that this is happening everywhere. But before I answer your question, let me just show my concern first. Before this becomes a next big thing, it is already a next big thing, there's a good chance that this could be a complete, utter, disastrously bad thing. Just like a lot of buzzwords were a bad thing because people abuse the word, people have unreasonable expectation about it, or people spend too much money to realize any reasonable ROI on any kind of investment. So if you're not careful about these things, we can absolutely fail as a, say, group of a data scientist or a data analyst. We can fail if you just ride along that wave and, hey, there, people are spending money in millions. Let's just build all these databases and let's make some money out of it.
Yeah.
That's how you fail. I think, going back to my first answer about why this is so different, let's humanize this whole thing here. All these privacy issues, all this decision-making process and all these other things. Yeah, we are the subject of the such data collection. At the same time, we have to make sure that, you know what, hey, I'm just a small guy here, but I'm going to retrieve data from some public domain. I'm going to make sure that when I set up a next store, although it's not even a franchise, I want to make sure that I understand the demographics of that town with some data here. And you can do this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Such change is more important. Asking the real business question, large or small, there's no small problem for small businesses. They just have a smaller budget. But let's make sure that we are about people, we are about answering questions. It's not about bragging about how much data you collected overnight.
So if I wanted to hire Willow Data Strategy and I was talking with you as the head of your company, what does your firm do better than anyone else out there in the data strategy, data analysis area?
We listen to our customers' problems. And what I'm trying to say is that, let me make another analogy, because it's always easier to make an analogy. Let's say I'm designing a car, and somebody comes to me and say, I need a car. I say, what do you want a car for? I say, no, what I want is this. I need a car that's as big as a tractor trailer, but it has to do 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. My answer to that question is that it's going to cost you about $7 to $8 million. Now, if you go to any kind of a database vendor, by the way, with this question, they will not argue with you because they will measure their success based on how big the database is.
Yeah.
Then it's not about his ROI. It's not about, oh, do you really need that kind of a car? No. What I'm trying to say is that, look, before you make that conclusion, let me hear you out and let me break it down and what kind of case you have for this thing here. And I realized, wait a second here, you don't need that kind of a car. You just need about 30 vans. Call it a day. I just saved you $7 million. That's our attitude. We want to answer business questions. It's not about I'm representing XYZ company who has to measure all the success based on how big of a database you build every year. It's not about that. It's about answering the right business questions. And the data, to me, is just a tool. All the tools will come and go. But the questions that we have to answer will remain the same. That's the differentiating factor in my mind.
This is Dennis Troianos, and you've been listening to Stephen Yu of Willow Data Strategy. Stephen, it's been great having you on the show, especially on this special edition of Big Data that we're launching in January of 2014. It's always good seeing you again. Stephen, thank you for coming to the show.
Likewise, thank you for the invitation. Thank you.